Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
We're going to talk to John Morosi about the latest with baseball and its chance at coming back. And if baseball is about to engage in a very high-profile, very tone-deaf debate. Because, let me just say, it would be very baseball for billionaire owners and millionaire players in the midst of a pandemic to get hung up on the amount of money split during games played during said pandemic and have that halt the return of baseball. That would be very baseball. So we'll see if they are in danger of that happening in 25 minutes. I'm not saying get ripped off. I'm not saying sign the next CBA and take less than your market value. Get what you're worth. But in terms of a high-profile debate, if it shifts from what is the safest way to do this to how can we make the most money doing this? That's going to be a terrible PR look for everybody involved. Do you agree?
It's inevitable.
It does feel like that's where we're going.
Yeah, it absolutely feels. I guess we were naive not to have suspected this all along.
Yeah, I mean, with the CBA coming up in a little bit after, 21, and then also the issue of baseball not having a revenue sharing model in place, it's different, right? They have no salary cap, so they have no salary floor. So players' salaries are what they are. They're not tied to a percentage of league revenue like it is in the NBA or the NFL. So if baseball's revenue takes a significant percent drop, the players are going to say, hey, we should just be paid a prorated version of our salary. The owners will say, but our revenue is generated largely from ticket sales, beer, merchandise in stadium, and if fans can't go in the stadiums, we're going to be making a lot less. How do we sort that out? I'm saying there's a reasonable way to sort that out that doesn't result in, hey, we figured out the testing and the antibody and where we're going to play the game and how we're going to realign and how we're going to keep the bus drivers and the clubhouse attendants safe, but we've got to work out this problem.
Yeah, right.
You know, I'm not saying it's not a legitimate problem. I'm saying they've got to work. They've got to come to a conclusion on the finances so that that doesn't get ugly and public after they've worked out the safety stuff. Because I don't think anyone's going to have much tolerance for that publicly. So we'll do that with John Morosi coming up at 3:30. As it does relate to COVID-19, I should just pass along this piece of news as we continue to update you on anything that has to do with public health locally. J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, has now warned that the coronavirus peak might not happen until mid-June in the state of Illinois. So when we talk about the reopening of the city and the state, it's, I think, worthwhile to note that as the models continue to evolve, as more data comes into it, that the peak in Illinois from April to mid-May has now been pushed back to mid-June. The quote, compared to the forecast I shared in late April, the time frame of plateauing near a peak has been expanded from mid-May into mid-June, Governor J.B. Pritzker.
Time to buckle down again.
Yep, on a statewide basis, we haven't passed our peak yet. We've seen more stability in our numbers, but we're not seeing significant declines in key metrics, including hospitalizations. So social distancing is working in that it is slowing the rate of growth and the rate of doubling of the infection, but it is not yet meaning that we're past the peak. So, just always want to pass along any news that comes with regards to public health. So that is the latest from J.B. Pritzker. I wish, Mac, that I was more disciplined in when the show ends on a Friday.
I saw this, yes.
Not getting back on Twitter by, like, if we sign off at 5:55, there's no reason for me to check Twitter at 6:15. Like, there is no reason. Because even if something breaks at 6:03,
yeah,
I can catch up by Monday's show. Like, there's right. there's absolutely no reason.
Family time.
Yeah, family time. But, you know, after I get off the air and Steph has been dealing with the newborn and the dog and maybe thinking about dinner or whatever, it's like, all right, tag in. I got to do something. And so on Friday, it was like, tag in and you got to walk the dog. And so, like, I walk the dog and I pull up Twitter because when I have an idle moment in my brain, I have been programmed to check Twitter. And what do I see? None other than my favorite college football player of all time, Deshaun Watson, responding to a tweet of Doug Gottlieb's, who was responding to a tweet from John Feinstein, if you can follow this logic train.
I'm with you.
Gottlieb saying that it is ridiculous and holding 40-year-old transgressions against modern evaluators to suggest that race was an issue in evaluating Deshaun Watson. The Bears evaluated Deshaun Watson. They simply misevaluated him. To which Deshaun Watson responds and shares, "The Bears never talked to me once. And if I didn't have such a great social distancing Mother's Day with my mom on Saturday and a great Mother's Day with my wife for her first Mother's Day on Sunday, I would have ruined my damn weekend. I don't need this in my life." Deshaun Watson saying this. Now, it's also not 100% true what Deshaun Watson said. The Bears did talk to Deshaun Watson. They spoke to him at the Combine, and they were with every team in the NFL who was represented at his pro day at Clemson, and it was widely reported about how John Fox took such a liking to Dabo Swinney, and Dabo Swinney saying that Deshaun Watson would be like passing on Michael Jordan, and John Fox made the recommendation that Deshaun Watson was his top quarterback in the 2017 draft class. So the Bears did speak to Deshaun Watson, but they did not do so in a memorable way to Deshaun Watson, because at the Combine, it's those car wash 15-minute interviews.
Very cursory, yes.
Right, and then at a pro day, every team is there, so it would be very easy for Deshaun Watson to not remember in a setting like a pro day what team may or may not have been there to scout him. And I went back and read, because, you know, I'm a glutton for this sort of thing, Dan Wiederer and Rich Campbell in the Chicago Tribune when they did like 75,000 words on the 2017 quarterback class.
Uh-huh.
Just to because people are coming all out of the woodworks and pulling up clips from the Rich Eisen show and Bears did do their due diligence. No, they didn't do it. Whatever. This is what was reported in the Tribune. And it's going to take me a minute here to read this, but let me just get this out here. Later in the pre-draft process, the Bears chose not to host Trubisky, Mahomes, or Watson at Hallis Hall. Instead, over a four-day span in mid-March, the Bears embarked on a three-city, three-quarterback scouting trip. Pace, Josh Lucas, Coach John Fox, offensive coordinator Dow Loggins, and quarterbacks coach Dave Ragone began in Clemson, South Carolina, I just pronounced it like I was from Clemson, at Watson's pro day. From there, they visited Trubisky in Chapel Hill and Mahomes in Lubbock, Texas. They hosted dinners and private on-campus workouts with Trubisky and Mahomes, but not with Watson. Watson sensed early on the Bears' interest in him was minimal and shrugged past it. People in his camp, however, were perplexed. Quincy Avery, Watson's quarterback's coach and a close confidant, scratched his head. "It just seemed like a big mistake on their part," Avery said. If the Bears were truly on the hunt for a franchise-changing quarterback, Avery wondered, why wouldn't they do the full gamut of homework on a two-time recipient of the Davey O'Brien Award given to the top quarterback in college football? Why hadn't the Bears held a private workout with Watson or taken him to dinner as they had with Trubisky and Mahomes? Instead, they met with Watson during the assembly line interview process at the Combine and for a bit after his pro day, and that was it. honestly, Avery said, I thought that either they had grabbed some kind of wild process where they were going to try to sneak under the radar and grab Deshaun because they had heard so many positive things about him, or it was an organization with a bunch of dysfunction that wasn't prepared to be successful or didn't have the pieces in place to truly take the next steps, end quote. So, how bad of a look do you see it that Deshaun Watson, all of these years later, is claiming that the Bears never met with Deshaun Watson?
I'm curious why this seems to be under his skin. The Bears can't be the only team that was potentially going to be drafting a quarterback that didn't have schedule a dinner or any private time with him, right? Why is this so troubling for him?
Well, I remember when he was on ESPN leading up to the draft and he was asked about Trubisky. Tanny, I'm not sure if we had it. I apologize for putting you on the spot like this. It was something about, like, what about the idea that Trubisky is being slated above you? And he was like, yep, good luck with all of that. Or it was something defiant and challenging and full of moxie and bravado.
Okay.
And it pissed him off because he was
an ACC quarterback, a superstar.
Yeah,
there's this other cat from the ACC, Mitchell Trubisky, and now you guys are kind of being held in the same conversation. As someone who did it on the field, as someone who won the national title, who did it on the biggest bright lights, what's your response to people who say, I like Trubisky more than Watson?
Hey, then you're going to have to live with the consequences that come with it.
Love it.
You know, that's how I see it. You know, I try to stay in my own lane and try not to, you know, take that path. And, you know, I respect Mitch and what he's done and all the hype he's getting, but at the same time, you know, all my results speak for itself. And, you know, I feel like I've accomplished a lot, accomplished everything that I could. And, you know, it just, I guess if that's who they're going to roll with, then, hey, so be it.
Live with those consequences.
Right.
I like that.
That's a good word.
So that was why. Because he was,
yeah.
Because he saw it as insulting. Mitch was 8-5 in one season in the ACC, and he had dominated the best competition for multiple years in the ACC. And that other guy was getting taken in front of him. That's why it pissed him off.
But if this thing is still burning inside him, I wonder, is this a manufactured thing with him? Like, we've been watching Jordan these last few Sunday nights. I'm just wondering if this is something Deshaun Watson, because he's got the Bears on the schedule this year, and I'm wondering if that's something that he keeps in his pocket to resurrect it anytime he needs it, anytime he's needing that edge in case of emergency, break glass, and remember when Ryan Pace passed on you for Mitch Trubisky. It just seems like much has happened since then, and life has worked out for Deshaun Watson. He's found a home. He's found a team. He got a nut job for a head coach general manager, but everything worked out okay for him.
It did, but we've talked about this before. Athletes and their slights, real or imagined, carry it with them forever, and many people in many competitive fields carry their slights with them. This program director wouldn't hire me. This person underpaid me. This person doubted that I could do this, this, or that. Like, so that wouldn't surprise me if Deshaun Watson has a little something extra for the Bears when they play the Texans this year. I will tell you, selfishly, as someone who you know has been beating this drum for years now, literally, and Ryan Pace did not comment in that piece that Weederer and Campbell put out mid-season last year, and then he just has never been asked about it since. Like, to me,
someday,
to me, it's insane that, like, when they report that piece in Week 9, that Ryan Pace has not been asked why he didn't fully vet Deshaun Watson the same way. And I've said that to Hub, who has access to him, and Grody, and, you know, they're not going to ask it on Bears All Access. I still think it's a valid question. What makes me happy is now that Deshaun Watson has said the Bears never once talked to me, to his 1.3 million Twitter followers, it's been retweeted 12,000 times with over 80,000 likes, maybe, finally, the next time Ryan Pace is on Mullion Haw, or if he's on with us, or wherever he is, maybe finally we will get him to go back in time and say, hey, Deshaun Watson says this. Why didn't you do the full one-on-one workout with him like you did Mahomes and Trubisky. Like, I want closure, Mac.
Yes, you need
closure.
I want it for you. Jeff Joniak has the chance to talk to him on the radio before every game, right? Doesn't he appear on every WBBM Bears pregame show?
Yes, he does.
That would be an excellent topic of conversation for Texans Week. I don't have the schedule committed to memory. Your schedule, boy.
It's late, so
you're gonna have to wait a while.
I know.
Put it on the back burner before you peel off 12:31, and we finally move to 2021, you'll get your answer, but you're going to have to wait until the end.
I'm sorry, it's a valid question. If Ryan Pace is still employed as the general manager of the Bears and he is allowed to go through the evaluation of these things,
what did you see
that made you not want to fully bet?
Is there an answer that would satisfy you? What if he were to say to you, I didn't like his accuracy? What if he were to say that? Would that satisfy you? Yes, it is an answer.
He threw 17 interceptions his last year in college, right. And I thought that he was too skinny to hold up to an NFL, 16-game season over a long career. It's an answer. It's a terrible one because he had won the national championship after the knee surgery. And, again, well, just why not? There are three quarterbacks in that draft, four if you want to stretch it and include DeShone Kizer. You know you're going to draft a quarterback. You've got the third pick. You're willing to trade up to two. What else do you have to do than meet with him? Like, what if the Lions would have taken him to be the heir apparent to Matt Stafford? Like, what if he ends up in the NFC? Like, what if you want to have him on your team 5 years from now and you want to establish a relationship with the guy? Like, to me, there's no explanation that is acceptable, but it's also equally unacceptable that he's never been forced to give an explanation.
We believe in Mitch.
Yeah, well, there's, you believe in
there,
Mitch.
Let's go,
Ryan Pace.
We had that revisited last week. You never know what might have come out of that, how DeShone Watson might have had an opportunity to earn a place in Ryan Pace's heart, too. Like, maybe when he made the dinner reservation, he made it under the name of Bill George, the legendary Bears linebacker, the first middle linebacker in pro football history, because that's what Mitchie the Kid did to sort of warm up to the GM, wasn't it? Didn't he go by
James
McMahon?
Yeah, James McMahon, table for eight, and then he had his beat-up Camry that they loved, and after I used literally correctly in the first segment of the show, I used it incorrectly in the first segment of the 3 o'clock hour. And around we go. Thank you, text line. I was not literally beating a drum.
We can get one for you, though. We can get you a drum. I have
the
some
DeShone Watson drum. I like it.
Yes, the DeShone Watson drum. Would you like a drum? Would you like to add some sound effects to your home studio?
Yeah, you know what? Maybe that's not a terrible. Howard had the megaphone to talk like in his mom's voice. Maybe that's not a bad idea. Whenever this comes up as like my pet project, until we get an answer, I literally bang a drum with DeShone Watson's face on it for it. there have been worse ideas. The other thing that I want to posit to you, say, why is he mad about this? He's responding to Doug Gottlieb saying it is beyond idiotic. The idea the league evaluates a quarterback on race in 2020 is just dumb, disconnected, and bitterness from 40-year-old transgressions. Trubisky isn't as good as Watson, Mahomes. The Bears evaluated them all and missed. That's it. Watson says the Bears never once talked to me. The elephant in the room of race as regards to this, Hub has suggested just on Twitter over the weekend that it's equally as absurd to suggest that race played a role in DeShone Watson not being a member of the Bears. Maybe, maybe not, but I would say I'd want proof if I'm making that allegation against Ryan Pace, but also to suggest that race is not a factor historically, and not just 40 years ago, Doug Williams, Randall Cunningham, Warren Moon, recent NFL history, to suggest that Donovan McNabb did not deal with race as an issue in the scouting of him, or Michael Vick did in him. Like, there's a reason why it was a big thing when Bill Polian talked about Lamar Jackson converting to wide receiver when he was as good as he was at Louisville. Like, there is a racial component to the history of scouting quarterbacks in the NFL, and you don't have to go all the way back 40 years.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson couldn't throw. I mean, that was a problem. The progress he's made as a passer has been remarkable. I mean, anybody would suggest that was race. I don't think was paying attention to it, because there were guys with a lot of bona fide credibility saying this guy's not an NFL passer. That had nothing to do with race, and they were guys who had. And one guy I'm talking about, Brian Billick, had a black quarterback who played for him, Tony Banks, when he was the Ravens head coach. So
Lamar Jackson's accuracy in college and the Petrino system and all of that was absolutely right. He did not complete 60% of his passes in college, and there was definitely a question on whether or not that could translate. And there have been questions about should Tebow play tight end and should Edelman so the idea of suggesting a position change is not exclusive to the black quarterback. I'm with you. You asked why would Deshaun Watson still be upset about it?
Yeah.
I have no idea if he feels like part of the reason why Mitch Trubisky 8-5 is 1 year as a starter with a pathetic bowl game performance in the ACC got taken 10 slots in front of him and was more fully scouted by more teams is because he looks like the traditional franchise quarterback. Like, I don't know. And when you hear Ryan Pace, he's like, he was blown away by his traits of humility and family values and his beat up Camry and his, you know, all that. It's like, well, you fell in love with Mitch Trubisky for some non-football stuff. And there were plenty of non-football things to fall in love with Deshaun Watson about if you would have gone out to dinner with him.
Oh, man.
That's the drum. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. We're going to get our answer, Mac. 2020 is the year we get the answer to the questions of the 2017 draft. It's very timely.
You're something.
I'm telling you.
You are something.
That's how my weekend started. 6:20.
One night Friday. You just woke up and yelled, yeah. Watson.
I traced your Twitter, so that's how I knew where you were at.
It's not healthy.
Do you think Watson is implying a racial overtone to this?
I don't know. Is that what you're reading?
Are you?
I'm saying the first time Deshaun Watson has commented on it in that direct of a tone, the Bears never once talked to me, which again, not true. They were at his pro day and interviewed him at the combine.
Right.
What got him to say that in all caps? Mm-hmm. Was in response to a tweet about race and evaluating quarterbacks.
Ooh,
and
all caps.
So it's
the next way to do it is by putting a period after every word individually to really emphasize it and bring it home.
The Bears never once talk. Yeah. All I'm saying.
Ooh.
So I have no idea. I wouldn't speak for Deshaun Watson on that. I'd love to have him on the show for a number of reasons. But that he put that out there like that, to me, does open up a very easy end the next time that Ryan Pace is on a show at a press conference where you can actually talk to him about anything you want to. Okay, this is a line of questioning that I really feel like needs to be asked. And for people saying, Parkins, why haven't you done it? I would love to. The request is in for him to come on the show. Trust me, I'm hoping
that
it happens.
Can't get in the room with the guy. The guy, you know, it doesn't give many opportunities.
Yeah, so I'm hopeful that changes. I'm also hopeful that we will get baseball sooner than later and that baseball players and owners don't start fighting over millions and billions of dollars in the midst of a pandemic. John Morosi will join us next to talk about the likelihood of that very ugly public fight. It's McNeil and Parkins.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And
sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
On the score.
Hey, John boy, how's the weather?
John Morosi.
Hello to a new adventure. Living my life in Michigan, my home state, surrounded by family and friends.
Columnist for MLB.com.
I think that with the White Sox, to see Moncada, the consistency of his work was really important. I think they're going to hit.
Out of here! Yoan Moncada drills it!
MLB Network Insider.
I think Theo at his worst. He would have no reason to begin a season with this framework of urgency and some pretty candid commentary and rhetoric about his own team if there was not some teeth behind it.
October starts in March.
Fox Sports Baseball contributor.
Yeah. Fox Sports Baseball God. John Paul Morosi.
I'm a God. I'm not the God.
John Morosi.
How about this for a homecoming?
With McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
As the segment is sponsored by Nature Valley Oats and Honey Crunch Bars, it's Mac and Parkins on The Score, joined now by MLB Insider for Fox Sports and the MLB Network, our guy John Morosi on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. JP, how's it going, my friend?
Danny and Dan, it's been too long, my friends, but hopefully we've got some baseball coming that will facilitate more baseball talk in your beautiful city here coming up.
I hope so. Let's put the issue of health aside for a moment, which is weird in the middle of a pandemic, but just for a moment, do you get the sense that owners and players are aware of how bad it will look for billionaires and millionaires to publicly fight over splitting up revenues in the midst of a pandemic? Are they aware of what that PR crisis would look like?
I think they are. And I do believe that ultimately we will see an agreement to play this year, at least on that side of things. And obviously the health equation is something else that we will have to address here shortly too. But I have to think, Danny and Dan, that just where we're at right now, that there will be that acknowledgement. That doesn't mean that we won't see some back and forth and some acrimony along the way, because like any negotiation in life, those sorts of things are inevitable. It's been the case in just about every single labor negotiation we have seen in the modern history of American sports, so I'm not sure why this would be any different. But at the end of the day, because of what both parties realize is at stake, I do think we will see an agreement.
So how close do you think we are to figuring out the logistics then of playing baseball in 2020?
Well, I don't think it was an accident that this conversation was happening now, this week, because it gives the parties involved plenty of runway between now and the end of the month, which is probably the effective deadline of when you really need to have a plan in place. Because if spring training starts on June 10th, which has been reported and mentioned in different places, with the regular season around the 4th of July, you really have to have an agreement in place by the end of the month, just to get everybody, of course, you've got players who are overseas right now, getting them back to the country and everybody reported in time. Those sorts of things will have to take some time. And so that's why I believe they've purposely given themselves a couple weeks to work through the details of this. But as Bob Nightingale and others have reported here today, the particulars of the structure are, as have been mentioned here a lot in the last week or so, with those the three divisional structure. You're only going to play within your third of the country, if you will, West, Central, East, the universal DH, the expanded playoffs. It's a very sound plan, I believe. And I think just as importantly, Danny, is the hinge within the plan that exists that allows the games to move to other sites as needed. Certainly there will be some individual city and state things to work through if they get to the end of May and all of a sudden three or four of the states they're open to play in are not going to allow it, are not open to allowing MLB to have the players there. Then they probably go back to the spring training locations, and candidly, Arizona and Florida have fewer restrictions than a lot of other states, at least at the moment. And certainly, Danny, you have to also bear in mind you have to deal with customs as it pertains to Toronto. Does Toronto simply just move their operation to the U.S. For the year in some way, shape, or form, especially without fans being in the stands? One would assume that would be easier than having to go through customs and quarantine every 3 to 6 days. But that's probably one of the final details that would have to be put into the equation before the agreement is made.
John, based on your conversations among baseball people, let's look at June 10. Based on what is available now in terms of the absence of a vaccine, what's the percentage breakdown on how many people you think actually would feel it's safe enough to go to work? Is it close to 50-50? Is it a high percentage of them that say, hey, let's go, let's do this now?
I believe, Dan, that a majority of players will play this year and would want to play. There are those that have their own underlying health conditions, or those whose wives are due to give birth this year, or have family members with underlying health conditions that may opt to not play, and by the way, that should be embraced and supported if that's their decision by the league, both financially and otherwise. I think it's important to realize that everybody has to make their own decision right now about what's best for their family. But I do believe it's going to be a majority. And I, in terms of the safeguards that are put in place, I think they will be somewhat location dependent, like all of us are going through this. It is a pandemic that is being experienced locally based on your family's financial, physical situation, where you're at, where you're living, what you're able to do. Those are all factors that we're experiencing uniquely around the country. And I think the baseball family is no different. We're going to see testing. I don't know that we would see it every single day, but probably every week. Temperature checks certainly every day. Masks by support personnel certainly every day. And, I recently in the last week or so, I was texting with Mark Wiedemeyer, who's on the coaching staff of the Kia Tigers in Korea, and he basically said to me, yeah, we get our temperature checked every day. Everybody, all the support staff around us, all wearing masks. There are no fans in the stands. But when we're together in the clubhouse, for the most part, it feels like normal. And on the field, we're playing ball, and for the most part, it feels like normal. And we've seen that in the KBO and the games that ESPN's been airing in the last week. So it's obviously not going to be normal, guys, at any point in time this year, and certainly until we get a vaccine, and even then. But we've got the potential to play in a controlled environment, and as long as the localities are not experiencing additional spikes of the disease, I do believe that we are going to see baseball played broadly around the country with no fans this year.
We're talking to John Morosi, MLB Network and Fox Sports. As it pertains to the money side of this, the labor disagreement, the CBA expires in 2021, and the crux of the issue, as I understand it, is players don't love a revenue-sharing proposal because with that normally comes salary floor, salary cap, like the other pro sports. The owners are saying they can't just give the players a prorated version of their salary because their revenues are going to be impacted by no fans in the stands, so they have to figure that out. Do I have it, like the broad strokes of the issue at hand? Is that how you would explain it, or am I missing something?
No, I think it's fair to point out that revenue sharing as a percentage and somewhat fixed percentages in the past have been associated with a salary cap. That is, I think, rhetorically accurate as you're laying it out. But I would say this, that these are certainly emergent, urgent times and very unique in the history of the league, the modern history of labor relations in the league. And I think it's important to note that not only has MLB never had a salary cap, the owners have never really even pushed for it in an especially strident way. That's never really been the bedrock of any proposal. You think about the last labor negotiations, which at times were quite contentious. There was never a thought, really, of there being a salary cap. That was not even whispered, hinted at. And so I think that on some level, MLB has really built up a fair amount of goodwill with the players, if you really think about it, in terms of not asking for that in the past, in any sort of concrete proposal. So I would expect that we could see a circumstance, Danny, to your point, where MLB and the union look at this and say, okay, for 2020, we have to have a very unique structure that we have not had before. But perhaps there's even a way to more meaningfully address the forward-looking situation at the same time, or say we would do this for 2020, but there is a long-term agreement that a salary cap will not be part of any future agreement for X number of years. There could be a way to have that compromise, both acknowledging the economic reality of the day that 40% of revenues are not going to exist for MLB this year because there are no fans, and also acknowledge the long-standing belief and tenet of the game that baseball has been and likely will remain the only major pro sport in this country that does not have a salary cap.
How would you handicap labor strife delaying the return of baseball more than a pandemic?
Well, it's certainly, we are in very unprecedented times. I would say that the chances of labor relations delaying baseball from coming back, if all the requisite public health officials are on board with this, governmental officials are on board with this, I still believe it's going to be low, that would happen. Now, I as we speak here today, we're now moving towards the middle part of May, I would still expect some turbulence in terms of things that you hear reported and said in the next week to 10 days, or maybe even 2 weeks. That is normal. That is the course of a negotiation of this scale, especially under the duress that we're experiencing as a country. But I still believe that at the end of the day, that there's going to be an agreement. I believe it. I've got just a very strong sense of where the sport is right now and the understanding, not only for this year, but for the future. This is not simply just a decision about, hey, how many games we play this year in 2020, but playing or not playing this year, I believe, will have a tremendous effect on the way the sport is perceived for years to come. And as much as this year there are some concerns about the economics of it, there is a lot more money to be made in 2021, 22, and onward than there is this year. And I think both parties realize that, and both parties are smart enough not to jeopardize their seat at the table when exactly what we need, which is a daily routine of sports, is what they offer. They're the one sport that does it, guys, that plays every day. And we got a lot of great sports in our country. Baseball plays every day. We need something every day. I think the people in charge of the sport realize that.
John Morosi, MLB Network and Fox Sports. As always, thank you for the time and the information. Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Danny and Dan, great to be back with you. We'll talk about Big Ten, hockey, other references I make maybe next time we talk, all right?
Okay, sounds
You always
good.
Squeeze it in right at the end, which is what we love about you. Thank you, John.
Sounds
Man.
Good. Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Mac, this is – it's so complicated. There are
really
so
is.
Many questions that they have to answer to be playing baseball by July 1st.
It's a real cluster F. There's no other way to describe it. It's going to be ugly too, and you know management is going to dig its heels in deep on this. Well,
of course,
nobody coming in. We got nobody buying hot dogs.
There was one thing in sports this weekend that gave me a glimmer of hope, but it is just a glimmer. I'll tell you about it next on The Score.
I'm a day or two away from securing a private island. I have a private island that I've secured. We're getting the infrastructure put in now, so I'm going to start doing the international fights too.
That's your favorite, Dana White, president of the UFC. And I know you find the whole thing deplorable and have no interest. There were live sports this weekend. UFC 249, a universally enjoyed card by all the reviews. I actually did not order it, though I was interested in the Tony Ferguson fight. And in like, you want to feel normal, Mac? Tony Ferguson, one of the big-time badasses in the UFC, loses a fight, facial fracture. Picture him in the hospital with his face literally broken, giving a big old thumbs up. That's normalcy amidst the pandemic.
There you go. Yeah, he's a warrior. I'll bleed for that's when the cheering satisfies guys the most, when they're bleeding and lying, flopping around all over on the field or in the octagon in this case. So what was the ticket for this weekend? What was 249? What did that set you back?
No, I didn't.
I know you
watch
didn't. Yeah, but what would it have cost?
I think this was a $60 pay-per-view, but I have to be honest with the ESPN Plus thing. I did not even look into it for this fight. I was not able to watch, so I apologize for not having. Someone will text in the exact number, but I was impressed as I went back and read about it and watched some of the highlights of the fights the next morning. That there was a positive test for coronavirus with one of the fighters, and then a couple of people in his corner also tested positive. They are asymptomatic, and so they are quarantining, and the UFC is offering them any medical assistance or access or things that they may or may not need in this. But it was interesting to see the possibility not only of live sports go off successfully with no fans in attendance, but also having an entire event not derailed because of a positive test. Now, obviously, that's very different than if a guy on a baseball team tests positive for COVID-19 and he's flying on an airplane with all of his teammates and there's recirculated air, right? A fighter is not flying to the destination of a fight with his opponent. So I get that there are clear differences there, but it was interesting that maybe we're at a point where one positive COVID-19 test does not necessarily have to mean we derail the entire thing. I read Dr. Fauci interviewed by Peter King today.
Yep.
For his quarterback column, and he was talking about how, like, yeah, if one guy tested positive, maybe you wouldn't need to do anything. But if three or four did, there'd be a realistic expectation that it could become widespread on the team, and that would have to be an acceptable risk, that, or like a risk that football teams in the NFL would have to be willing to deal with. It was somewhat encouraging to see a positive COVID-19 test happen, there be no immediate threat to that person, and then the event still go on. Maybe that's like a totally sports-centric way of looking at it, but for a moment in time, there was normalcy amidst the pandemic.
I saw some of what Fauci had to say over the weekend as well. And with football, I think that's what he picked the number four as the cutoff line for NFL. And suggesting if there's four guys who test positive, you're looking at a 2-week shutdown. You know, and if once they start this here NFL season, how in the hell are they going to program? How are you going to penalize if you're shut down for 2 weeks? You can't play. I mean, I have no idea what their plan B would be under such circumstances.
It feels like what's going to happen is we're going to start up sports in some sort of convoluted way, and then they're going to have to be paused.
Yep.
That's what it feels like is going to happen.
Hurry up and wait.
And Dr. Citrenberg, when he was on last week, he was talking about, you know, a second wave and all of that sort of thing. So I'm not even saying that that will be the product of a mistake. Like, that doesn't mean that it would be wrong to, if they have it under control, to play baseball in July, but just know that you might be stopping again in October. Like, that could be our new normal here until we get a grip on this whole thing. But for UFC fans out there, I know when people saw that a guy tested positive, it was like, is this going to derail the entire card? And good old Dana White makes Roger Goodell look, you know, aware of this coronavirus. Just full steam ahead. They had an event, and we'll see if any other leagues take any note from it, because that was a profitable event that people very much enjoyed this weekend. The director of The Last Dance was on with Bernstein and Will Perdue. We're going to bring some of that back for you in the 5 o'clock hour. But I'm curious, you said that this is resurrecting score memories. I want to know, like, what the takes were on the score at the time for some of the stuff we've seen throughout The Last Dance and how it's changed for you. It's coming up on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.